I trained against him in combat.
Luke's eyebrows rose. You're one of the Baron Doe with combat training.
I am in life. I was the teacher of Char-Say Saul, who is now Chara. The Baron Doe, who study combat, train mostly in unarmed and staff combat. And I was interested in learning to defend against the lightsaber.
What was your conclusion there?
The lightsaber is a weapon of the Force, and if you are not similarly armed, must be countered with the Force.
Luke nodded in agreement. Did you have any sense of a problem Jason might have been dealing with? An overriding fear or concern?
No. I think he was a man at peace. I would not say he was happy, but he was at peace.
Luke sat back to think.
Ben asked,
When he left Doran, did he say or give any indication as to where he was going next?
No, I believe not.
The Hidden One's eyes looked back through the years.
He had been talking about returning to Coruscant. I think his search for knowledge was finished for the time being. But there was something. One day, he asked me what I knew about places where the energies of the Force concentrate and linger, though there was no indication as to why they do so.
Luke sat forward again.
I trained in one such place, a nexus of Force energy on a small swamp world.
Late in his stay, he evidenced a sudden interest in such things. I believe he had found something in his studies of written materials, though not ours. Perhaps something he had brought along from one of his other stops.
But he mentioned no names or places?
No.
Luke glanced at his son.
That's about it for me. Does anything else occur to you?
Well, on another subject...
Go ahead.
Ben looked the Hidden One square in the eye.
Are you going to kill the Jedi who come looking for me and my dad?
The Hidden One's eyes widened.
Kill them? That is not what we do.
But they will come. And when they don't get answers that help them, they'll send someone like Master Horn, who's trained in investigation. He'll figure things out. So my question is, how many are you going to kill in order to keep your little secret?
This is not a little secret!
The Hidden One seemed almost embarrassed by his outburst. He looked back and forth to see if anyone had witnessed it, then returned his attention to Ben. He leaned forward.
This is the seed of the Baron Doe, the seed that must take root if the Order itself dies. You have never lived in a time when the threat of extinction of an entire way of life was very real.
Ben laughed outright.
I was born halfway through the Yuuzhan Vong War. Remember that? Maybe as far out as you are, you didn't hear much about it. Some of my earliest memories are of hiding, surrounded by darkness, knowing that if we're found, we'd be wiped out. Here I am again, same situation.
He gestured at the gray-black stone walls of the chamber.
People are still afraid of it, afraid of annihilation by some unknown enemy, war trauma. Civilians and soldiers both get it. I think it's what you've got.
You little larva!
The Hidden One was almost spitting in his anger.
Are you too stupid to realize that you Jedi are facing a new purge?
Ben gave him a scornful look.
There's the arrogance of youth.
The Hidden One turned to Luke.
Surely you know better. You're about to experience another purge. If you're unprepared for it, the Jedi may wink out once again. This time, forever.
Luke shook his head.
I don't think so. I've dealt with Chief of State Dalla directly. She has no agenda of destruction.
She has none, perhaps. What of her subordinates? What of her military planners? All of whom came to power in the wake of a war made so much more horrible by a Jedi. Recent history is not unknown to me. We get the Holo news feeds here.
The Hidden One began counting off on his fingers.
One, the leader of the Jedi Order, once immensely popular, is discredited. The Jedi Order is weakened. Two, he is sent off into exile, depriving the Order of his strength and wisdom. The Order is weakened again. 3. Each Jedi is accompanied by an observer, who tells the government where he or she is at every moment. The Jedi are suddenly more vulnerable to a mass attack, a mass extermination. How soon before the Jedi are wearing tracking devices? How long before they are implanted with explosives? All in the name of Alliance safety.
Luke gave him a flat, hard stare. You're wrong.
You're wrong. You have made your own order vulnerable. The fate of the Jedi now rests with leaders who are weaker and less experienced than you. That decline will continue until the Order is locked in a hopeless struggle with its government and all but helpless. Then it will die again.
Ben smiled at him, a scornful smile.
And do you oppose the destruction of the Jedi Order?
Of course I do.
Even though you're helping it along by keeping us prisoner.
The Hidden One stood, and Ben thought for a moment that the Keldor would attack him. Then the Hidden One stepped away and departed, walking so fast that his robes whirled around him. When he was gone, Luke gave Ben a look of mild reproach.
You really need to work on your adolescent confrontational impulses.
That wasn't adolescent, Dad. It was an investigational impulse.
Luke looked quizzical. It's true. You're not demonstrating the emotions I'd expect of a testy 16-year-old.
Questioning can't always be polite and courteous, Dad. I learned that from Lon Shivu. At a certain point, you push, and you see how they respond.
He gestured in the direction the Hidden One had taken.
And what did he react to? Enemies. The Alliance government possibly destroying the Jedi. The Jedi looking for us and possibly finding him. Everyone's out to get him, Dad.
In other words, he's paranoid.
At least. He might even be crazier than a piranha beetle with a pin through its head.
Possibly. The problem... Luke thought about it. The problem is he may also be right. The Jedi Order is vulnerable, and it may be in genuine danger.
We need to see if we can reach Jaina or Aunt Leia through the Force.
Luke shook his head. I tried last night, several times. There's some interference here. Either the first Hidden One chose this spot very well, because it naturally concealed his followers from searchers using the Force, or the Baron Doe had perfected some technique that accomplishes the same thing. Either way, contact seems unlikely. We're on our own.
Underground Access Shaft, Kessel.
Mission Control to Rogue. Report, over.
Wedge, hovering in his X-Wing only a few meters from the new shaft in the chalk-white soil ahead of him, activated his helmet mic.
Rogue here. I'm getting too old for this.
Copy that. Too old.
Koi Kamat, Nurin Vakil's Twi'lek wife, acting as mission control, sounded amused.
Begin your decline.
You mean descent.
Wedge eased his X-Wing forward until he was directly over the shaft. Other starfighters ringed the shaft at the same altitude. Their pilots were waiting for similar authorization from Koyi. Wedge reduced power on his repulsors and began to descend. In moments, he was surrounded by stone wall, so recently drilled that his repulsor wash constantly kicked dust and pebbles free. He activated his landing flood so he could lean to either side and see through the canopy into the depths below. Over his comm board came the next exchange.
Mission control to Homegirl. Report. Control, Homegirl.
Inuri Forge sounded crisp and alert, not affecting the unconcerned drawl that so many retired pilots, including Wedge, did.
Everything's in the green. Homegirl, start your descent.
It was a quick 2 kilometers down for Wedge. He spent it listening to the others reporting and being issued their go orders. There was no diminishment of comm signal strength, as Lando's crews had situated communications repeater units in the tunnels. Wedge had been warned that the farther away from the entry point he ventured, the more likely it became that signal strength would periodically wane or be lost. Lando's crews had not had the time or resources to saturate these tunnels with the repeaters. At the bottom of the shaft, Wedge found himself in a broad, high-vaulted tunnel as straight as a proton torpedo's trajectory. He consulted his navigation screen, brought his X-Wing around to starboard, and kicked in the thrusters. Of course, in this environment, a starfighter would not ridiculously outclass an ordinary speeder in velocity. They couldn't afford full starfighter speed in a place where sudden turns, debris, and even dangerous life forms might pop up every kilometer or two. But with high explosives and Han's anecdotal energy spiders around, he'd much prefer to be surrounded by composite armor and shields than a thin Durasteel carapace. He followed the route indicated on his nav board, a dotted line that led him far away from the entry point. Each pilot would be doing the same, heading off to a distant start point widely separated from the others. Then each would begin an even more complicated route back, dropping a lethal demolition package in each cavern he or she visited. Pilots would be making rearming stops too. Wedge's X-Wing could only carry a total of 6 missiles, so he'd be making one or two such stops. Wedge felt the old familiar tightening of his gut and shoulders. This wasn't a combat mission, but people could die. And if they failed, a world would perish. Han and Leia, in the cockpit of the Falcon, watched the last starfighter, Narin Vakel's A-Wing, begin its descent. The Falcon would be up next. Han turned to look over his shoulder at Alana, who was in the rear seat.
All strapped in, kid?
Alana nodded, solemn.
As am I,
C-3PO assured him from beside Alana.
I assume your failure to ask me the same means that you assumed I would be properly restrained.
Han turned forward again.
You should always be properly restrained, Goldenrod.
I'm sorry, sir.
Leia shot Han a reproachful look.
Han means you should always be safe, 3PO.
Obviously what I meant.
Han tapped a button on his comm board.
You secure, R2?
An affirmative whistle emerged from the speakers. R2-D2 was back in the engineering space, ready to deal with any mechanical problems that might occur.
Millennium Falcon, this is Mission Control. Report status.
We're having a party here,
Han reported, prompting a giggle from Alana.
How about you?
Wishing I were. You are cleared to go.
Han eased forward, then began a careful descent. The hole dug for this purpose, spacious by starfighter standards, barely accommodated the Falcon or the two ships to follow. Han cautiously eyed the distance to obstacles readouts as he descended. But soon enough, he was at bottom level again and taking a route that would gradually lead the Falcon to the southeast. The first several caverns went without incident for Wedge. He'd hovered in the entryway to a cavern, armed his proton torpedo system, taken careful aim at the explosives mound in the center, and fired. The missile with its comparatively inexpensive thermal detonator warhead instead of an expensive ship-crippling proton torpedo had flashed across the intervening space and buried itself in the ground a few meters from the mound. Within moments, sparkly balls of light, bogies, had arrived from the floor or ceiling or distant banks of machinery. Wedge had turned away and kicked in his thrusters, and that was it. Approaching his fifth cavern, Wedge saw its entrance tunnel alive with animals, centipedes especially, and one big crimson spider. They were fleeing, some of them attacking one another as they went. He nodded. One of the speeders with a sonic unit had recently been here and accomplished its mission. He approached this cavern cautiously. The speeder's presence might have stirred up bogeys here, and he'd hate to have one knock out his starfighter's systems, even temporarily. But as he reached the cavern entrance, there were no bogeys in sight, and only a couple showing up on the X-Wing sensors. They seemed to be at the cavern's far entrance. Wedge hovered, fired his payload, and turned away. There was a clunk from immediately above, and Wedge jumped as a green centipede, a meter long, suddenly appeared on the canopy over his face. The creature coiled and struck, its tail and stinger hammering the transparasteel. It did not penetrate. Several cubic centimeters of black liquid that had to be venom oozed out over the canopy. The centipede struck again and again, the successive strikes accompanied by decreasing amounts of venom.
Sorry, little guy.
Wedge eased his starfighter forward.
Nothing for you to eat here.
Wedge's astromech tweedled at him from behind, barely audible through the canopy, but easy to hear through the X-Wing's comm system. Wedge checked the comm board translation output to make sure he'd understood.
That's right. Roll on. One more missile and we have to rearm.
The centipede, responding to either the R2 unit's noise or the rotating of its head, scrabbled its way aft over the canopy toward the droid. Dividing his attention between tunnel ahead and what was transpiring behind, Wedge watched its progress. The creature came within half a meter of Rolon and stopped there, raising its tail to strike. A small panel on the astromech's front opened. A probe extended and touched the centipede. There was a faint zap noise and a flash of blue as an electrical charge hit the insect. The centipede spasmed and, stunned, fell off the X-wing. Rolon retracted its lead and shut the panel. Wedge grinned. With luck, that would be the most dangerous enemy action he'd have to face today. Later, the tunnel intersection broad enough to be considered a cavern itself, Wedge set his X-Wing down beside two other vehicles. One was a cargo speeder with a long bed loaded with plastic crating. In his career, Wedge had seen more of those crates than he could possibly remember. Each held 6 or 8 proton torpedoes. Unloading one crate were a sandy-haired young man, who spared a smile and a wave for Wedge, and a loader droid half again the height of its human partner, its bulky frame designed for lifting strength and slow movement. Nearby sat the Operation Sol 8-5 interceptor. Its body was similar to that of an A-wing, sleek and wedge-shaped, but extending port and starboard from the fuselage were struts to which inwardly curved solar wing arrays, like those of the old Ada-2, were attached. The starfighter was painted a deep blue, but carried no planetary or other service markings. Leaning against it was its pilot, Rasati Ener, a lean blonde woman dressed in a black version of the A-wing pilot's uniform. She pushed herself away from the hull and walked to the X-wing as soon as Wedge popped his canopy.
Awake yet, General?
Reluctantly.
This'll wake you up.
Rasati turned back toward the young man handling her missile rearmament.
Hey, kid. Come over here and introduce yourself.
Obliging, the teenager trotted over. He was compact of frame and wore a tan jumpsuit. He extended a hand up to Wedge.
Good morning, sir. I'm Drathen Forge.
Wedge shook his head and raised an eyebrow.
Forge? Inuri's nephew?
Great nephew, actually.
And you work for Lando?
For now, mostly as a mechanic. But I'm a good flyer. I've put in an application to the academy. I have provisional acceptance. I have to keep my grades up for the next year.
Good luck with that.
The loader droid straightened from the Eta 5 and turned its inverted triangle head toward Drathen.
12 missiles loaded and reporting online.
Its voice rang metallically.
All right. The young man gestured at the X-Wing. Let's prep 6 proton formats for this one.
With a half salute for Wedge, he headed back to resume his work. Wedge returned his attention to Rasati.
How's Nuwara?
Wishing he were here with me. If he weren't trying to dig the Jedi out of a legal hole, he'd be flying something on this operation.
Wedge gestured at her interceptor.
Looks fast.
You've never flown one?
He shook his head.
I've done some simulator work, but never actually been in one. My daughter Sile flew them.
You want to trade for the rest of the operation?
Wedge blinked.
What? In the middle of a mission?
Sure. This isn't the armed forces, Wedge. It's more like a heavily armed bachelor party. What's Lando gonna do to us if we trade?
Wedge scrambled out of his cockpit. He knew it was an unseemly spectacle for a retired officer. On the other hand, it was no longer his job to set a good example.
Chapter 25. Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Tahiri and Mirax carried Seth between them, his arms over their shoulders as though he were a drunk comrade. He was not heavily built, and they were strong women, so it was his awkwardness rather than his weight that posed the greatest problem. Tekli preceded them, and Winter followed behind. They hauled the unconscious Jedi through the darkened speeder hangar, trying to keep themselves as calm and centered as possible. Other Jedi, especially the Masters whose hangar this was, were more likely to sense distress. But no one met them in the corridor outside the hangar, and no one approached them as they made their way to the nearest turbo lift. As they neared the lift, it hummed with the sound of an arriving car. Tahiri and Mirax got Seth spun around and made it with Winter and Tekli to a darkened nook before the turbo lift door opened. Tekli peered into the hall and breathed a sigh of relief. She motioned the others forward. They stepped out again and saw that it was Jaina, awaiting them at the lift.
"Any problems with your observer?"
Tahiri asked. They moved into the lift car.
"No. He sympathized with me for not catching any petty criminals tonight."
Jaina blinked, affecting an expression of innocence.
"It looks like my night's outing was a complete failure."
Tekli addressed the turbolift controls.
"Second medical level."
The lower medical level was a solemn, quiet area of bare walls and windowless doors, not too different, Tahiri reflected, from the prison she'd just visited. At the back of one medical supply storage chamber was a door marked Radioactive Materials, Authorized Access Only. The door had a security pad beside it. Tekli tapped in the access code.
"Master Silgal and I are the only ones authorized to enter. Even Master Hamner must come to us. This is the lesser of two radiation storage chambers. I've moved all the materials that belong here into the primary chamber."
The door slid open, and they moved through into a small outer chamber. Inset in the right wall was a swing-out door, as thick as a blast door. Through it was another chamber, this one set up with a heavy patient bed and a bank of monitoring equipment. In minutes, they had Seth strapped down to the bed and hooked up to the monitors. Finally, Jaina could breathe a sigh of relief. This mission was done, and now the Jedi could begin to benefit from the knowledge Seth might provide. She turned to Tekli.
"You're all right here?"
"Fine, fine."
"Everybody, come on up to the main level. You can get cleaned up, plenty of extra clothes around, and grab a cup of caff. Rest for a few minutes."
Mirak shook her head.
"Have to get back to our quarters. There's no telling when Corrin will be back."
Winter looked regretful, too.
"I wish I could."
Jaina sighed.
"I'll get you back out through the same hangar you came in by. No worries. Tahiri?"
Tahiri appeared dubious.
"I don't know. There are plenty of Jedi who don't remember me fondly."
"And they should know that you and I are on good terms. It'll make them think about things."
Jaina's tone was firm.
"Come on."
"All right."
Fresh from a Sana steam and in clean garments, Jaina and Tahiri nursed fresh cups of caff and talked, their voices low. At this hour of night, the common dining hall was all but unoccupied, with the banks of overhead glow rods along the walls switched off, leaving only those in the center of the ceiling still shining. It was a restful place, particularly after the events of less than an hour earlier. Tahiri looked around, her expression wistful.
"You miss it?"
Tahiri nodded.
"Then come back."
Tahiri shook her head.
"No. Not yet, anyway. Have you suddenly acquired the Luke Skywalker urge to save everybody, one person at a time?"
"Better than the Darth Vader urge to make the galaxy a better place by destroying everything that doesn't behave."
"True. Jason had enough of that for both of you."
A man entering the dining hall paused in the shadows by the main doorway, then headed their way. As he emerged from the darkness, Jaina saw that it was Dab. He waved as he approached.
"Jedi Solo, you couldn't sleep either."
"That's it. Dab, you remember Tahiri Vela?"
"Do I ever."
Reaching their table, he extended a hand toward Tahiri.
"Good to see you again. You probably don't remember me. From Borlaeus? Dab Hantak?"
From the corner of her eye, Jaina caught Tahiri's sudden stillness. She turned to see Tahiri frozen in place, her calf cup halfway to her lip. Her eyes were wide, her expression as stunned as if she'd just shot herself while cleaning her blaster. And then Jaina realized why. Inwardly, she cringed. She made her voice very gentle.
"Tahiri, you knew him as Tark. Remember, little Tark?"
"Tark,"
Tahiri repeated.
"Little Tark. Yes, of course."
Her voice was almost mechanical. Dab dropped his hand to his side.
"Would you two care for company?"
Jaina shook her head.
"Girl talk, sorry."
"Ah, understood. Good night, ladies."
Dab turned and headed off in search of the calf cart. Slowly, Tahiri set her cup down.
He's Anakin."
Jaina nodded.
"Remember, that's why Senator Shesh chose him all those years ago. A distraction because of the way he looked."
"You could have told me."
"I had gotten used to it. I wasn't even thinking about it when I put the Dark Meld team together. I forgot. I'm sorry."
"Forgot?" I spent months getting myself addicted to seeing him, Anakin, and then a couple of years trying to get over it, and boom, he's here.
Tahiri was pale, and she shook as if with cold.
And you want me to come back with him here every day?
The observers won't be here forever. Nawara Venn says that the High Court is leaning toward reviewing the whole executive order about the Jedi. If they do, they're sure to strike down most of its provisions, including the observers.
That's not the luck I deserve, and it's not what I'll get.
Tahiri's expression turned bleak.
I'll come back, and they'll give me him as an observer. That's what'll happen.
Desperate to wrench Tahiri's attention from the man who looked like the long-dead love of her life, Jaina flailed through memories of the night's events.
Your lightsaber.
What?
You lost your lightsaber at the prison.
Tahiri nodded, confused.
If they find it...
Oh.
With a visible act of will, Tahiri yanked her thoughts away from Dab.
I don't think it'll be a problem.
Why not? It's probably crushed under tons of rock. It may never be found. If it is, well, it's new. I didn't want to use my old Jedi lightsaber anymore. I just built that one. The hilt design won't have been recorded anywhere. I was wearing gloves tonight, so no fingerprints, and non-conductive gloves when I was assembling it, so no prints inside.
Good. But Jag lost his blaster at the same time.
Also not a problem. That model is custom-built for him, big enough for him to hold with his gauntlets on. Unless he throws a switch on the butt, if it's separated from him for more than a certain number of seconds, it blows up.
That's strange. Your boyfriend's strange.
I know.
Tahiri's gaze wandered over to where Dab now sat, alone at one long table, peering into the tiny playback screen of his holocam, doubtless reviewing recent recordings. She stood.
I have to go. Tahiri, I don't think you ought to be out on the streets and walkways the way you're... Let me know when he's gone. Forever.
Tahiri whirled away and left the dining hall at a run.
Underground Complex, Kessel.
It was hours into the mission, and its organizers could begin to relax. Demolition mounds all through the gigantic cavern and tunnel complex had been detonating on schedule. Mission Control, Koyi Komad, monitoring events from low planetary orbit in the Imperial-era mobile command post Lando and Tendra had overhauled for this operation, reported that the resulting tremors were doing what they were supposed to, taking place, waning, and then subsiding, doing only the damage to be expected of individual groundquakes. The precise sequence of detonations was not permitting overlapping ground shakes to reinforce one another, and sensors in the Great Kessel Fault running along the planetary axis reported no undue motion, no dangerous stress. The Falcon, having fired its last refitted missile into its last target cavern, sat on a tunnel floor only a few kilometers from the exit shaft. Leia gave Han a curious look.
We really can leave now.
True.
Any reason we're not?
I'm gonna be the last one out.
Han knew that he sounded stubborn, maybe even sulky rather than determined, but he didn't care. He demonstrated far too much nervousness about the underworld of Kessel, and he was determined to show himself and the planet that he wasn't driven by fear. Leia glanced back over her shoulder.
Actually, technically, since Alana's in the seat behind us, she's going to be the last one out.
I should be the last one out.
Alana's voice was decisive.
I got to be the last one to shoot a missile.
Leia smiled.
You sure did, kid.
Control to Falcon, come in.
Falcon here.
This was, Han hoped, the announcement that all other vehicles were out, and that the only thing left to do was stay clear of the planet's surface until the explosion sequence had run its course.
Rearmament Team Epsilon is offline and not reporting in. Suspected bogey encounter. You're the closest vehicle with rescue capabilities. Our last rescue speeder is bringing a stranded subsonics pilot out now. Can you investigate?
Absolutely. Let's have the coordinates.
As Han watched, both a set of XYZ coordinates based on Kessel's master map and a dotted line navigational diagram based on the cavern's map appeared on his nav console.
Got it. Thanks.
Control out.
Han brought the Falcon's repulsors up and gently lifted the transport from the rocky tunnel floor. Leia leaned over to give the navigational diagram a look.
Not very far. He must have been on his way out.
Well, let's make sure he gets there.
Their route led them through the cavern they'd seen destroyed before their original escape from the complex. Most of the life there had been lost by the explosion, so the cavern was dim, very little of the phosphorescent fungi on the ceiling remaining. Once past the far entrance to the cavern, they progressed barely a kilometer into the connecting tunnel before they saw Epsilon. A human man, young and sandy-haired, he ran toward them as fast as his clearly exhausted legs would carry him, frantically waving at the Falcon as he came. He was alone and carried no equipment. Leia unstrapped from her seat. "I'll get him at the boarding ramp." She hurried aft as Han gently set the Falcon down as close to the running man as he dared. While the transport settled, Han heard the whir of the ramp descending.
"Hey, Goldenrod, give up your seat for our new passenger. You can join R2 aft."
"Yes, sir. If I must, sir."
C-3PO unstrapped and awkwardly eased past Alana, then hurried aft.
"Rogue to Falcon. Come in."
"Falcon here, Wedge."
"Are you on that rescue call? My exit route takes me out right past that spot, so I'm inbound. I can stand by your retrieval targets until you get there."
"No, thanks. We're already on station."
Han heard the ramp lift into position.
"Lifting off in about 10 seconds.
"No worries, then. Rogue out."
There was a clatter of feet on deck plates, and Leia and their new passenger entered the cockpit. Han spared the young man a look. He was drenched with sweat, and gasping so hard for breath that he was almost sobbing.
"What happened to you, kid?"
The young man dropped into C-3PO's seat, his chest heaving.
"Ran."
"Where's your partner?"
"Destroyed. We need to go."
Suddenly uneasy, Han lifted off and spun the Falcon around.
"Destroyed by what?"
"Energy spider."
Han's breath caught for a moment. He kicked in the thrusters and accelerated along their exit route.
"Tell me you mean one of the new ones. The red ones."
"No. One of the blue ones."
A chill of apprehension climbed Han's spine.
"Not good. You said destroyed, not killed. Your partner was a droid?"
"Loader droid. We'd been hearing this skittering noise at our last station. We took off for our exit, but we ran into a bogey, literally, which killed our speeder and our lights, except for pocket glow lamps. The skittering got closer, and then we saw it."
Han couldn't see the young man shudder, but he didn't have to. The reaction carried into the young man's voice.
"J4 told me to run for it. He charged at the spider. Last I saw, it had him all wrapped up, and the lights in his eyes were going dark."
"Yeah."
Han put on a bit more speed. His sensor board alerted him to a new contact. He glanced at it and saw a distant blip behind, rapidly overtaking them. For a moment, he had the sudden fear that energy spiders could now outrun the Falcon, but the sensor board presented the pursuer's transceiver code as Rogue.
"Wedge, this is Han. You're probably already past it, but there's an energy spider back your way somewhere. Stay alert."
"Haven't seen it. Saw a crashed hauler and a mangled lifter droid. I think it was the same one Drathen Forge was with."
Han glanced back and saw the name Forge on the breast of the boy's jumpsuit.
"It was, but the kid's